Numbers chapter 6, verse 24 to 26. Brother David.
You may recognize this as the priestly benediction that has an ancient history. Now, I use the American Standard Version, and you can see it up here. You're probably, the King James may be more familiar where it says the Lord, but I prefer the American Standard Version because it uses the divine name. And we're going to focus a little bit on that on our blessing, on our lesson today. Jehovah bless thee and keep thee. Jehovah make his face to shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. Jehovah lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. So we're going to study the words of this this afternoon and hopefully get some lessons for us as well. Now I'm going to put a slide up here, something that you may not recognize, but if any of you like Bible archaeology, you may know what this is. This is a silver amulet. Now it doesn't look like a silver amulet, but it's a silver amulet that was found rolled up in a tiny roll of silver back in 1979. And the archaeologists, noting the fragility of it, unrolled it very, very slowly. And do you know how long it took them to unroll it? 3 years. Again, a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. Well, what's significant about this? Well, this amulet was found, as I mentioned, in 1979, and it has inscribed upon it the text of our study, this priestly benediction. Now, I want you to think about the time period. Somebody wore this, probably an Israelite woman, when Solomon's temple still existed. That's how far back this goes. Can you imagine this? This is something that predates the destruction of Solomon's temple. Now, there's something else important here. All of us have, from time to time, met Bible critics and Bible people that have higher criticism of the Bible. They have all the reasons why the Bible can't be trusted and you should throw it out, you should treat it with skepticism and suspicion. And one of the things that some of these Bible critics say is that, well, Moses didn't write these things. They were compiled sometime after Israel went to Babylon, after the temple. That's when it was really put together and it was cataloged and so forth and so on. Well, there's a problem with that idea that this amulet presents, because this is almost word for word Numbers chapter 6, verses 24 through 26. That existed before the Jerusalem fell, and therefore before the so-called creators by the modern critics could have put it together. It is truly a great foundation for our faith that Jehovah has preserved his word for us. Now, I'm going to show you the Hebrew here in these four verses. Now, I can't speak Hebrew. You know, we spent a lot of time learning the biblical Greek, but, you know, Greek has letters that don't look that different from our letters, modern letters, but Hebrew, they don't look anything like today, and then they read from right to left. But I'm going to have you listen to these spoken in Hebrew, and at this point in time, just listen closely. We're actually going to listen to it a second time, and the second time I'm going to ask you to identify some things in it. But in this first case, we're going to hear each verse read by a Jewish rabbi. All right, here we go. You're hearing verse 24 and 25 at the same time. Let me go back here just for a second. My computer's running a little bit slow. All right, we'll try this again. Verse 24.
Yevarechecha Adonai v'yishmerech.
Can we turn that a little bit louder? Okay. All right, verse 25.
Ya'er Adonai panav elecha v'chunekka.
And verse 26.
Yisa Adonai panav elecha v'yasem lecha shalom.
Now, within the words here, there is the divine name. And you know the divine name. It's where Jehovah comes from. They call it the Tetragrammaton. Here's an illustration of this. You see those four letters there? Tetra means four, grammaton, the four letters. If we transliterate it to English, it would be YHWH. And again, we're reading from right to left. I guess that's like right to left. There we go. And you can see the four letters there, YHWH. Now, we translate that, or we pronounce it Jehovah. Now, we're going to look again at this particular benediction, and I want you to see, look at it, look at the Hebrew letters, and see where you can see the divine name. Can you see it? There. And it, right below it, and right below that. Now, we would say that, pronounce that Jehovah, or some prefer Yahweh, or Yehovah, or some variation of that. Now, I want you to listen to what the Jewish rabbis say when they get to this word. Okay, here we go. There's the three places. Are you ready? Listen carefully.
Yevarechecha Adonai veYishmerech.
What did you hear? Adonai. Very interesting. This is a sharp audience for listening. Next one.
Ya'er Adonai panav elecha vihunneka.
And one more time.
Yisa Adonai panav elecha veYasem lecha shalom.
So they are pronouncing the divine name Adonai, not Jehovah. Why is that? Well, the Jewish people have a suspicion about the use of the divine name. They feel that it is so holy that it is somehow unholy to pronounce it. And so they substitute Adonai, which means Lord, basically. The King James follows that. That's why you say, the Lord bless you and keep you instead of Jehovah. It's kind of following it as well. Now, is it Jehovah or not? Well, we've seen that it is, in spite of the fact that they substitute this. This does illustrate something interesting, though. In the Hebrew language, there are only consonants. There are no vowels. Most of you are familiar with that. The Jews, because of their familiarity with the language, know what vowels to put in. And in modern Hebrew, they have developed a system of what they call vowel points or pronunciation points. It's just little symbols and whatnot that they put above the words that give you a hint of what the vowel should be there. But we say Jehovah, and it's interesting because this appears to be the very vowels that were used from the word Adonai. You see, take the A up, the O up, and the A up. Yehovah. Now, we've anglicized it a little bit with an E, Jehovah, but you can see how it comes. So that's sort of how we got the general pronunciation. By the way, when I was a Jehovah Witness, they were very particular that Jehovah is the way that it needs to be pronounced and you need to use it all the time. Well, we can agree that it should be used. I mean, Jesus said, I have made your name known and will make it known. So the use of the name, the divine name of God, which he gave himself and identified with it and gave it to us, we should recognize it. One of the reasons, as I mentioned earlier, I like the American Standard Version better. But we should not get out of shape if somebody says, well, I prefer Yahweh or Jehovah. That's fine. The pronunciation isn't that important. It's not vital. It is the understanding of what the name represents. I mean, even in our use of Jesus, that's not the correct pronunciation of Jesus either. Do you remember what it really is? Yeshua. Right. But Jesus is quite acceptable, and Jesus does not like us any less because we use Jesus instead of Yeshua. All right, continuing on, again, here's our Hebrew. Do you notice that each verse contains certain elements of this benediction, and the verses are gradually longer? In this Hebrew text, the first verse has three words, the second, five words, and the third, seven words. And I found this little indicator, a little chart on the internet, which I liked. It breaks down the words in syllables. There are a total of 15 words. And from a lesson that we gave some years ago on the number 15, we think it represents deliverance. And I sort of like this ironic blessing as representing deliverance as well. All right, a few more things of interest. The words of Numbers 6:24 were a priestly benediction that was to be placed as a blessing upon Israel. Now, if we look at verses 22 and 23, we see that these words did not come from Moses, they come from Jehovah. Let's read that. Numbers 6:22 and 23. And Jehovah spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto Aaron and his sons, saying, on this wise shall ye bless the children of Israel, and say unto them, and then we have the verses of our consideration. So God is saying, here is a priestly blessing that I'm giving to Aaron and his sons. And they, in turn, are now to pronounce it as a blessing upon Israel. You kind of see a very organized way in doing it. And to this day, in synagogues around the world, they say these words at the conclusion of their services. In fact, it's not just Orthodox. Even many of the Reformed do, because it has become a ritual and a tradition that is done. Now, the way this tradition is done is the rabbi raises his hands with the palms facing downward and chants the benediction. And the people are not allowed to look at that. The tradition is that, you know, for example, if this was a Jewish synagogue and we just finished and I'm about to do it, all of you would stand up and you would face the back. That's what they did. That's what they still do to this day. And then the rabbi chants it. So here is one recording of the rabbi chanting it, so you can get a feeling for what they hear. Yaher Adonai panav elecha v'chunecha. Yisa Adonai panav elecha v'yaseh elecha shalom. By the way, just as an aside, how many of you have been to an authentic Jewish Passover celebration? Any of you? I have not been. I want to go someday, just simply because of the historicity of it. But you can see how beautiful this is. Now, I mentioned that the placement of the hands is in a certain way. And here's an illustration of how it looks. Now, don't get ahead of me here. There is an actor in Hollywood by the name of Leonard Nimoy. Don't get ahead of me. Leonard Nimoy was a Jew. He was raised in a Jewish synagogue. And as a young child, he talked about this ending ritual that we just spoke about. And so, you know, as a young child, I don't know, 8, 9 years old, he's standing around here and they're giving it. He wants to look back and he sees this. Well, you know, I loved Star Trek when I was a kid, right? In the 60s, right? I was a teenager. It was went on. But I will never, ever look at Star Trek here and this Vulcan greeting without remembering this is Numbers chapter 6, verses 24 through 26. You can see here's a picture of the ancient Jewish rabbis doing that very thing. Fascinating. You know, I gave this talk in Milwaukee. And one of the younger brethren came up to me and says, Brother David, says, you're the only one that could work a Star Trek picture into a talk. Oh, goodness gracious. Well, let's take some lessons from the words now. Let me read it one more time, and we're gonna dissect this. Jehovah bless thee and keep thee. Jehovah make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. Jehovah lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. Now, the context of this is very interesting. If you go to Numbers chapter 6, the first part of that chapter is involved in something else entirely. Anyone remember what it was? The Nazirite vow. It's almost all the Nazirite vow, and then you have this plugged in at the bottom. And I couldn't help but wonder, was there a connection in some way with this? Well, I went to see if Brother Russell had any comments, and he does have a comment regarding the Nazirite vow. And I have here a quote from reprint 5942. He says, but the sacrifices which the Nazarites offered in connection with their vows did not typify Christ's sacrifices, but rather the consecration and devotion of the people, the antitype of which will prevail during the millennium. So if you were an Israelite in ancient Israel, and you were just so in love with the arrangement that God has made for your blessing, and you wanted to do something more, you could take animals, and there were animals that were specified under the law. There was even a thank offering, which was a free will offering, and you could express that way. But God had made this arrangement that says, if you really like to do something more, take a Nazarite vow. And a Nazarite vow could be taken for a specific period of time, maybe a week or a month or whatever. Just as an aside, we do have at least one example of an individual that was a Nazarite for life, and that was Samson. His mother took the Nazarite vow, and it kind of came to him. So he was a Nazarite for life. And there were certain requirements that the Nazarite had to do. But it was a way to express from your heart what you wanted to do. And I think what Brother Russell may have had in mind here is that in the kingdom, we would think that as the kingdom blessings begin to roll out, there will be those so much that are falling in love with Jesus and falling in love with Jehovah as they see this plan. They say, I want to do something more. And the something more is consecration. You know, we think of consecration in our terms as the sacrificial consecration, which it is. But the consecrations in the future will be consecrations unto righteousness, not consecration unto death, but a consecration just to do good and to be a blessing. And so that's the idea here. So we're thinking that perhaps that priestly blessing that followed the Nazarite vow is a way in which the glorified priesthood, Jesus and you and I, if we're faithful, can acknowledge those consecration vows from the people in the millennium by pouring about the priestly blessing. The Lord bless you for that, and his face shine upon you, and all of the elements there. And incidentally, we think this fits pretty well, because it was given to the priest specifically to pronounce on the nation of Israel. And so as Israel comes into the bonds of the new covenant, and they begin to do things like these individual consecrations, that we will be able to bless them. Now, somebody might say, all right, well, this is a blessing that is to be given from the glorified priesthood unto the nation of Israel. What about the rest of the world? Well, the rest of the world will come into Israel. And one of my favorite texts, we had a little bit of fellowship this weekend, is here in Isaiah 44:5. One shall say, I am Jehovah's, and another shall call himself by the name of Jacob, and another shall subscribe with his hand unto the name of Jehovah and surname himself Israel. Brethren, this is just one of many texts that show that the world will respond as well. They will see the blessings upon Israel there within those millennial blessings, the blessings in basket and store. And they will say, I want to be part of that too. And so they will come into Israel and be part of Israel. Well, brethren, that's a prophetic application. We want to see if we can take some applications to ourselves in the here and the now. So what can we do? Well, we have a high priest, Jesus, and he pronounces a blessing upon us. He is our master. He oversees our consecration and our sacrifice day by day. Of course, all under the auspices of Jehovah, but that's his function as high priest. So he wants to pronounce this blessing from Jehovah upon us as well. Now, there are five parts in the blessing here that we want to take a quick look at. Number one, to bless and keep them, is what it says. That means to favor and protect. Number two, to have his face shine upon them, to be pleased. You know, when I was growing up, I could tell pretty quick if my mom was pleased or not. You know, if I did something, she was, oh, I didn't need any words, did they? You know, but if you did something, you know, you pick a daisy, give it to mom, there's that smile, you know, that's the favor that we get from this idea. Number three, be gracious, merciful, and compassionate. Number four, turn his face toward them to give his approval, attention, presence, and lastly, to give peace. When you ask God to bless others or yourself, you're asking him to do these five things. So let's start out with bless and keep. The word here is Barak. Easy to remember. We had a president of a name, Barak Obama. It means to bless. And as it says here from Strong, it's a primitive root. It means to kneel, and by implication, to bless God as an act of adoration, or vice versa, for man as a benefit. So God has blessed his people with many, many blessings. How many? It's uncountable. But God delights in blessing us. You know how much pleasure you get from being a blessing to others? By putting a little word of encouragement. Just to say, oh, you know, I remember a little boy, he hurt himself, you know, and the mother was busy. Said, Mommy, I hurt myself. Go into to dad, you know. So he went in, Dad, I hurt himself, you know, and didn't say anything, come out. What's the matter? He didn't even say, oh. You know, little things that we can do that show us that we understand what our brethren are dealing with. The difficulties of this life, the disappointments, the heartache, the physical suffering. There's so much that we can do. So let me ask very quickly, what has God blessed you with? Little audience participation. What has God blessed you with?
Understanding his word.
Wonderful. Something else? Say again.
The brethren.
What a gift the brethren are. Something else. Yes. Seeing what a delightful God Jehovah is. Not a God ready to crush you for the slightest mistake, but a God that wants to hug you and bring you into his presence. Well, these are all examples of blessings. Here's what I came up with. The truth, and Brother Johnson mentioned that. The brotherhood, somebody mentioned that. You know, you're on the same page with me. That's a good sign, isn't it? I heard one brother said of his wife, he says, you know, wife, you're awesome. And she says, I know. And somebody was looking on, he said back to them, yeah, it's good that we agree on things. The brotherhood is awesome. Our families, our children, the hope that we have, the daily watch care, the chastisements even, to help us grow spiritually. You know, sometimes we don't take the chastisements of the Lord in the best way possible. But when you are being chastised, when you are being tried in some way, it is evidence of how much Jehovah God and Jesus love you. Paul makes the point, if you don't have these things, then maybe you should question, you know, the depth of your consecration and your relationship. But we have them. Here's just some scriptures that talk about these blessings. Romans 4:8. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord will not reckon sin. Justification. What a blessing that is. Galatians chapter 3, verse 8. And the scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel beforehand unto Abraham, saying, in thee shall all the nations be blessed. So you are being blessed in order that you might be a blesser in the kingdom. James 1:12. Blessed is the man that endureth temptation. And sometimes when we're being tempted, we don't necessarily consider that a blessing. But brethren, if we are enduring it, then we know the Heavenly Father's face is smiling upon us. 2 Peter chapter 4, verse 4. If any of you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are ye, because the Spirit of glory and the Spirit of God resteth upon you. So these are all examples of blessing. Now let's take a look at keep. The Hebrew word here is shamar. Again, from the definition, a primitive root properly to hedge about as with thorns to guard, generally to protect, attend to, etc. Brethren, you don't have to listen to many testimony meetings among us to hear examples of how God is keeping you, is protecting you. You know, Kathy and I have a way of dealing. We do a lot of traveling, and very often, you know, you get involved in these traffic jams, these things like that. And, you know, for me, I want to let's get going. But the way that we have dealt with it is that the Lord is slowing us down because up ahead there's going to be a problem, and he's keeping us from that problem. You know, those are type of things that the angels are going to come to you when we're beyond the veil. And he says, yeah, remember when you were on Route 80 in 1983 and there was that accident? Remember you were held back 15 minutes back there? It would have been you. We kept you from that. That's the type of thing we can think of. Let's look at some scriptures about keeping. Thou wilt keep them, O Jehovah. Thou wilt preserve them from this generation forever. This is a precious promise. God will keep you. He has not forgotten the work that you've done. And he wants you to succeed. He wants you to become part of the body of his son, part of the bride of his son. Psalm 17, verse 8. Keep me as the apple of the eye. Hide me under the shadow of thy wings. Psalm 25:20. Oh, keep my soul and deliver me. Let me not be ashamed, for I put my trust in thee. You know, sometimes we're in situations and you say, oh, I don't want to be in this situation. We want to escape. It might be an emotional situation. It might be a financial situation. It might be a situation with an illness of some kind. You know what I'm talking about. You wish, oh, I wish I was somewhere else here. Well, the Lord understands that, and he will deliver you in due time. God will deliver us from those things. He will make the way of escape for us as we need it. Psalm 91:11. For he will give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. I mentioned earlier about angels. Here's a scripture that says that they're angels. They are ministering spirits. Somebody asked me once, you really think you've got a guardian angel? I said, probably dozens. And that's true of all of us. They desire to peer into these things. You know, angels don't suffer physically like you and I do. They don't get old. And so they're very interested in watching in your life how you react and how you respond to these things. How do you react when there's disappointment, when your expectation is not met? How do you react when somebody insults you to your face? How do you react when a brother or sister insults you to your face? You know, some of us, we'd react differently. Man of the world, well, okay, you know, he's one of my children in the kingdom. Oh, brother, sister, you shouldn't do that. You should know better. Well, why should we react differently? We love both of them. And again, if it's a brother or sister that does something untoward, maybe we should view it a little differently to see how we can help them. But that's the type of thing the angels are watching. And they're learning, dear brethren, from you and I in this. Verse 34, wait for Jehovah and keep his way, and he will exalt thee to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, thou shalt see it. Wonderful promise. I'm going to speed up here just a little bit. I know I was given some extra time, but I still got stuff to do here. Make his face shine upon thee. This is from the word panah, face. And the definition, the face is the part that turns. You know, you're like this. This is your face turning this way. Used in a great variety of applications, literal and figurative, countenance, face, favor, or presence. You see a little bit of a spiritual application here. And then the word shine, the Hebrew word ore, a primitive root, to be, causative, make, luminous, literal and metaphorical, break of day, glorious, kindle, shine, set on fire, all of these ideas. Well, let's look at some scriptures where these are used. Psalm 31, verse 16. Make thy face shine upon thy servant. Save me in thy loving kindness. In that case, it's a face that is showing loving kindness toward that individual. We want to see God's face looking upon us and saying, well done, my good and faithful servant. Or if we're in a troublous situation, saying, yes, I know. I've heard your prayers. I know exactly what you are bearing, and I've got a plan for it. Stay strong. Wait on me. Psalm 80, verse 3. Turn again, O God, and cause thy face to shine, and we shall be saved. And by the way, this last one, this is repeated three times in the 80th Psalm. Sort of sounds like it's a refrain or something. Continue on. Be gracious unto thee. We have the Hebrew word hanan. Properly to bend or stoop in kindness to an inferior. To favor, bestow, be, deal, give, grant. Gracious or graciously, be merciful, have pity upon. You know, I think it was Brother Homer this morning was talking about grace as part of the theme talk. And God's grace is undeserved kindness. It's a kindness that he bestows upon us every day. Remember the hymn? Oh, to grace, how great a debtor, daily I'm constrained to be. That's true of all of us. Grace is in our lives every day. Do we have the eyes to see it? You know, Brother Fry used to emphasize that a lot. He says, Brother David, he says, when you pray for things and when you know that God's hand is going to be upon you, look for it. If you don't look for it, you may miss it. We have to have our spiritual eyes open, never to miss those little graces that he gives us, little tiny things sometimes, but when we see them, we know. You know, I'll give a little example of little tiny things that just are significant to only you. When we were driving up to Newfoundland in July this summer, a pretty long drive up through Canada, I had taken the ferry to Newfoundland, and I had a 500-mile drive from where the ferry was to the other side of the island where we were having the convention. And so I stopped in the afternoon at a McDonald's, right? Yes, I got a salad, not a Big Mac. I stopped at McDonald's for lunch, you know, and I brought it out to the car because I prefer to sit out in the car and listen to talks or music or whatever rather than sit in. And so I'm eating my salad there, and this car pulls up, Canadian car, and somebody gets out. It's a woman. Boy, she looks a little familiar. And then a man, an older man and a younger man get out. It turned out to be Jason Boychuk, who was driving up, and he had Brother Frank and his aunt, Sister Ann in the car. So, you know, here we are, hundreds of miles at a McDonald's, and they show up. And I got really excited. So I went over and, you know, we talked a little bit. And I came back to my car and finished up my, my salad, and I put it down, and there was the receipt at McDonald's. Now, you know, when you get a receipt at McDonald's, they give you a number. Guess what my number was? It was 144. Now, brethren, in the world, well, another coincidence, right? That was a grace to me. It meant something to me, especially on the tails of running into the Boychuk family like that. Brethren, grace is all around us. A couple of scriptures, Psalm 103, verse 8. Jehovah is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abundant in loving kindness. How merciful is God? How gracious is God? How slow to anger is God? How loving, kindly loving is God? Brethren, how merciful, how gracious, how slow to anger, how kindly loving are you? If we are children of God, we must put on these as well. We have the grace of God in all these ways. Can't we but reflect it and show that same grace to each other and to all with whom we have to do? Jehovah, lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. By the way, you know, I forgot to, when we were listening to that last verse, I forgot to ask you to listen to the very end of it. I missed thinking of it, but you would have heard what at the very end of that? Shalom. I'm sorry, that was kind of fun to hear it, but I forgot about it. But anyway, a countenance, peniam, it's related to face, just another form of the word. And perhaps the English translation gave countenance here instead of face for a little poetic variety. In the first instance, in this promise, God's face shines and brings gracious things. Now, in the second things, it says God, by his countenance, will lift his own countenance to you and bring peace. And that's what we want. And doesn't this suggest that Jehovah frequently gives us a delightful sense of his favor and peace? You know, I've talked to so many brethren that have had very difficult physical problems. You know, they've had surgery or they've fought cancer or broken limbs and whatnot. And so many of them, you know, they said that, you know, I felt the prayers of the brethren. I felt a peace come upon me, and I couldn't think of any other reason other than God was lifting his countenance upon me through the prayers of these brethren and sharing that with me. Psalm 4, verses 6 through 8. Many there are that say, who will show us any good? Jehovah, lift up the light of thy countenance upon us. Thou hast put gladness in my heart. More than they, when they have their grain and their new wine are increased, in peace will I both lay me down and sleep, for thou, Jehovah, alone makest me dwellest in safety. These are beautiful. You know, one of the things in the kingdom that I think will be delightful is that they will be able to have the actual music used that goes with this. We have no idea what the music goes with these hymns. We just have the poetry. But they were all hymns. All the psalms were songs. And won't it be nice when you hear the actual tunes? There was a photographer who took a picture of some birds flying. And in the context here of Jehovah lifting his countenance up and giving his peace, this photographer took the picture at exactly the right time. Isn't that great? A happy face. Brethren, let's summarize the lessons that we have here. There's 11 lessons, probably more than that, that we've got out of looking at this. Number one, it was the priests that were to give the blessing. You and I are to be the priests. You and I will give the blessing. We will give the blessings to Israel, to restore Israel, who will consecrate unto righteousness in the kingdom, as shown by the Nazarite vow. Jesus, our high priest, can give that blessing to us now. Jehovah wants us to know his blessings. You know, we have that hymn, Count Your Many Blessings. We don't sing that just because it's a beautiful hymn. God wants you to know how he's blessing. Five, we have much to be thankful for. Six, God will protect us from any harm to our new creature. Let me just say it for a moment here, that Jehovah, your heavenly Father, is interested in your new creatures. He is much less interested in your flesh. In fact, his interest in your flesh only goes as far as at how it affects our new creatures. Now, this has to be because we know that there are brethren who have died in prison. There are brethren who have starved to death. There are brethren who have endured death of their flesh in many ways. And God can never be accused of, well, why didn't you take care of them? He was taking care of their new creatures. And so with us, though we be dying on the outside, as the Apostle Paul says, we are being renewed on the inside. God will protect your new creature from any harm, period, as long as you are faithful to him. Angels are charged to watch over us. That's not a childhood fantasy. They are ministering spirits that specifically have the duty to watch over you and take care of you. God will be gracious to us. We saw that many examples of it. We must be like God in reflecting these traits in our own consecrated lives. Jehovah will give you a delightful sense of his favor, like that little receipt with 144 on it. And finally, Jehovah will give you peace. Peace ultimately is what we want. And much peace have those who love God. Brethren, in conclusion, I'm going to play a hymn. And I just want you to listen to. This is a group that put together a hymn based upon The Lord Bless You and Keep You. It's surpassingly beautiful. I hope we have enough time sound to hear it. I just want you to close your eyes, be one with the music and the words, and consider. Here we go. May the Lord bless this to you.